Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast at Inside Lacrosse featuring Big Ten Network, Inside Lacrosse analyst, and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, we have another great show ahead today. We're going to recap some great games that happened on Wednesday. We're going to preview the biggest games of the week and also talk about the news that happened this week as we get ready for playoff lacrosse. Are you ready? Dixie, let's get it.
I think the last part of the whip got caught in your throat.
How's it going, man? You got some games happening on Thursday night. Just full disclosure, we're recording this very late. On Wednesday night, Dixie is in State College, Pennsylvania. He's going to handle the Women's Big Ten Tournament quarterfinals on Thursday night on TV. And I have some of my own business that I got to take care of on Thursday night. So we're trying to knock this out on Wednesday.
Boys' weekend.
Yeah, well, a boys' day.
Let's hear it for the boys.
Oh, let's give them a chance. Wow, that is a really old, sorry song. I'm sure there's like a better version of that. Why did you have to put that in our listeners' heads, Dix, on a Friday morning? That's killing
us. D-Fly, let's get it.
All right, Dixie. I have to tell a personal story that I love. So tonight, my wife usually takes our 7-year-old daughter, Hannah, to her lacrosse practices. Amy's one of the assistant coaches on the team, quickly got roped into coaching a team on like the HOCO Rec League. And
is she like Will Ferrell and kicking and screaming?
So Amy had a tennis match tonight. So I took
a tennis match. What a tennis match.
She plays tennis. She's really good. She won 6-0, 6-2. She's 4-0 on the season. She's first single. She's legit. But
quiet, please.
I'm going to get to the point. Let me speak, please, Dix. So,
I just got a picture of tennis match.
I take Hannah to her lacrosse practice, and this is a big deal. This is a big deal. They're going to do their team name today, and they're going to get their first uniforms. This is my daughter's first uniform experience in her whole athletic career. She was on a swim team, but like, you know, they didn't get numbers and jerseys. So Hannah's got an idea of the number she wants. And I tried to, on the drive over there, I go, look, you know, sometimes they do it by like sizes. So like, uh-huh. I know I was number 11. She really wanted that number. My wife was number 3. She really was like, that's my second choice. Number 3. And I said, you know, they kind of like, that might not, neither of those might be available to you. So they lay them out and some other team got numbers 1 through 20. So Hannah's team,
that way. Yeah.
Hannah's team has like 21 through 40 and they're like Under Armour reversible pennies. They're pretty sweet looking. But you know, this, you know, 21 through like 24 are like the extra smalls. These are tiny little girls too. Uh-huh. I was like, Hannah, I think you're a medium. And we got there. The coach says like, you should get there early because we're going to do the jerseys. So practice at 6. We were there at 5:15. We were the first people there by like 30 minutes. The coach, no one else showed up. So, but Hannah was like, Dad, I got to get the jersey number. I got to get the jersey. I got to be there early. Oh, we were there early. So Hannah sees her number and she just like locks in on number 27. She throws it on. I said, 27, huh? And, you know, I go, sure you want that number? She's like, yeah, I think I want number 27. And then this was decided for her. I said, you know, your cousin, Michael Tiamfracaro, he's number 27 at Princeton. And she was like, this is my number. I'm number 27. I'm number 27. And she was sold on it. Sold. And she couldn't take that thing off. I think she's sleeping in it right now. Like, she would not. It was that experience. I'm sure you've gone through that with your boys, but man, that was really cool. Emotional thing. And it was cool. Great moment.
That's
today.
Really cool.
In the history of the Flynn family, that was a big day.
She would have grabbed 21. She could have been Matt Dixon. Matt Dixon would have won.
I know.
But that's all right. I mean, she doesn't. I mean, I don't know the size of the other girls. She doesn't strike me as an extra small girl.
No, there were a couple of little girls who like fit in those just right. And man, it was cool. All right. Yeah. That's my personal news. Let's get to the games that happened.
Well, hold on. What color are they? Because that's important to the girls.
Oh, okay. So they knew they were going to be gray and white.
It's pretty cool.
And, yeah.
What's the name of their team?
Well, they had to decide that. So they had a list of
the gray
names.
Ghosts.
They decided on the Sharks. It was between the Sharks and the Unstoppables. And it was a real Donnybrook between the two of them. There was one side that really wanted to be the Unstoppables, and one side that said, we are not going to be called that. We're going to be called an animal name. And there were a bunch of animal names. And then most of them sided on the Sharks. And then I told Hannah, I said, you know, you could call it the Unstoppable Sharks. And she ran down the hill and told her coach that. And then her coach announced, like, to solve all of the problems, because there were some girls that were really angry at the other girls. And they're like, we're going to call it the Unstoppable Sharks. And Hannah was really proud that she kind of came up with that. But then I said,
I would have gone Unstoppables, but I think that's a great, very witty compromise.
Yes.
Let's go US. What do you say, US? You know?
Okay. Well, they can do like they put their sticks in and they can go Unstoppable Sharks, or just we're the Sharks and we're unstoppable, or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was a cool moment.
Good
stuff. All right. Let's get to these games that happened on Wednesday. There were a couple big ones. First, in the Big East, Denver defeats Villanova 11-10 in overtime. Denver was down 7-6 to start the fourth quarter. They rally back. They take a 10-8 lead late in the game, but the Wildcats weren't done. They scored two goals late in the last couple minutes to tie it up. Ethan Walker wins it in overtime. Big win for Denver.
I think the what sticks out to me are the comments made by Kevin Warren last week, head coach at Georgetown. Playing these teams twice, in particular in the Big East, is very reminiscent of professional football and playing teams in your division, where you play them maybe in September and then you have to play them again in November or December. And the first time around, Denver really handled the Villanova Wildcats. They had their way with Nova just a few short weeks ago. It was 17-10, 18-10, something of that along those lines. That was on April 10th. So we're talking a difference of just over 2 weeks, and the game was in Philadelphia, and then Denver had to reach down and pull it out in overtime. So I think it just speaks to, one, the familiarity that the teams have with one another, but two, Villanova's been a team that's been up and down all year, you know, in that bottom half of the top 20, really bottom fourth of the top 20. Then they fall out, then they come back in, then they fall out, come back in. Maybe this can, even though it's a loss, maybe this is one that they're like, you know what, we can play with the big boys. They're in the Big East tournament. They'll get Providence on, I think it's May. It's not this weekend. It's next weekend. So Big East, good game. Good game on Wednesday.
Denver is now 10-3 on the season, and they're much better at home. I mean, well, you can imagine anytime they've had to travel east, they've struggled. They've played some really good competition, but those have been tough matchups for them. The other game of note on Wednesday was Vermont gains a 16-14 win over Albany. With that win, the Cats clinch a playoff berth. Cats blew it open in third with a 6-2 run and then held on to win it 16-14.
Yeah, nice win for Vermont after they were upset a week ago over against Binghamton. And again, when you think about that, that was their first game in a couple of weeks after a COVID pause. So you never know how your team is going to respond. Albany, you know, the great space coaster kind of keeps rolling, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, and another down moment for the Danes. But you know, it's been a fun year in the America East, UMBC, Stony Brook, Vermont, Albany, you know, providing a lot of cardiac moments. And yeah, this was a really good game on Wednesday as well. Hats off to Vermont.
Dix, it's time for news of the week. Did I do that right?
It's food review. News of the week.
There you go.
We should Thank play you. That old. Do you remember the on the Stern show ages ago when Robin would do the news? Yeah. We would play that song. Do, do, do. Hey, how's your news? Would you like to sing a tune? Yeah, we should play the old Robin news song.
Wait, Robin doesn't do the news on Stern show anymore?
No, the Stern show is a shell of its former self.
Oh,
very disappointing. Very disappointing.
That hurts. They say that about some old Inside Lacrosse podcasts, not ours, but other ones, that they're just a shell of what they used to be. All right, Dix, the biggest thing that happened this week is the PLL had their college draft. And I don't want to talk too much about the details. I want to look big picture. And I think what I want your opinion on is that I always feel when the NFL draft, the NBA draft is, they pick the best players, right? They pick the guys that have the most potential, the biggest stars, and it sort of showed out of what we really think about a lot of the teams. A team in particular that had a lot of guys selected were Denver Pioneers. Notre Dame had a bunch of guys selected. Guys we've talked about throughout the season, guys like Ryan Tierney or Jake Caraway, wherever it's mentioned, we always talk about them as being, well, they're like fifth-year seniors who are complete pros playing against college kids, and it's kind of not fair. It also, you know, validated a lot of those thoughts. What were your overall takes on guys who were selected? I don't care about draft order and all that stuff. We saw Ohio State get a couple guys. There were no Blue Jays selected.
First off, I tried to stay awake for it a couple nights ago, and it just didn't work out.
Come on, man. You're an old man. I knew it was coming on, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was a really nice television product. It was
I'm not saying that I didn't want to watch it. I would have really enjoyed watching it, but I just couldn't stay awake. So I was combing through the next morning. I think, okay. First thought, Jeff Teat, number one pick overall to the Atlas, basically signifies the end of his college career. You know, we'll never see him in a Cornell big red jersey. And not saying it was surprising, but he was going to play this year, you know, had the big red played. And I guess he's not going to use any more eligibility if, in fact, he reports to Premier Lacrosse League, which I would imagine he would with them taking him, you know, number one overall. I think the other thing that sticks out to me in the first round was Connor Kearse, taken number seven by the Whipsnakes. This is a guy who has played attack this year for Rutgers, Coach Brian Brecht, but Coach Jim Stagnita of the two-time defending champion Whips took him over Doc Sakin, which I thought was really, really interesting. So you've got this big, 6'3", 230-pound shooter. You know, Whips went for size, strength, great outside shot. He's a guy that could become a 2-point guy in this league. A really good bomber from downtown. Talking about bombers, right before him, Mac O'Keefe, a Penn State kid taken by the Chrome. You know, and then you look further down the line. How about what the Atlas coach Ben Rubier did with this draft? I mean, they've got Jeff Teat at one, Doc Sakin at eight, Jake Caraway, who could prove to be a steal at number 10 and then Danny Logan, number 11 from Denver. So two really high quality guys taken, really four overall by the Atlas. They're really stocking up after Ben Rubier has been granted the opportunity to do a little bit of a roster overhaul, which I think is going to benefit that lacrosse club. Ryan Tierney, we talked about him a lot, taken 16th overall by the Whips. And then you've got a pair of Ohio State guys in round two, 12 and 13. The Chrome get Taryn Fenko and Trey LeClaire goes 13 to the Archers. I stand corrected. Mac O'Keefe is going to the Chaos. Chaos are the Scorpion dudes, right? Yeah. So he's going to the Chaos and Coach Andy Towers. Round three, I love Justin Anderson. I've said it before. He's one of my favorite players. A guy taken 20th overall by the Chrome. It'll be interesting to see how he plays out at the next level. And then fourth round, Nick Grill, 31st, Whips, go home to the Terp pro team there.
You love him, right? You talked about Nick Grill all season.
Yeah, he's a junkyard dog, man. He's tough. And he's, very rarely do you have, like, you know, when we talk great defensemen, JT Giles Harris from Duke, Will Bowen from North Carolina, you know, the Notre Dame guys get mentioned. They get kind of lumped together just because they're all very similar in style. Gibby Smith, Georgetown. But, like, you know, Makar is the number one at Maryland, but it was Grill who was winning Big Ten Player of the Week honors on the defensive side of the ball repeatedly beginning of the season. And, you know, he's always – and he doesn't really look like the prototypical Division I defenseman, does he, Nick Grill? A little smaller, a little stockier, but tough as nails and play some great lacrosse. I probably went a little longer than you wanted it to, but you asked me just to kind of go through and what jumped out at me. And those are the guys that congratulations to every single one of these guys, you know, 32 terrific lacrosse players making it to the next level. But those are the things that really stuck out.
Dick's final piece of news that we really got to touch on is this Chase Scanlon story from Syracuse. On April 17th, he was suspended indefinitely from the Orange lacrosse team. He's brought back on Monday by Coach John Desco. Apparently, on Tuesday, he did not attend practice, and it was reported in some of the local papers or news sections that some of the players on the team said they would walk out of practice if he were to attend. And they wanted the leaders of the team wanted a meeting with the Syracuse AD, John Wildhack. Today, Wednesday, John Desco gave a news conference where he read a statement saying that Chase Scanlon was brought back on the team, but he will not be attending their game this week at Notre Dame. And that's all he would say to really address the situation. It was a very short statement. Many questions from reporters that were on the virtual news conference. I was not one of them. You were not one of them. But they reported that many questions were asked and none were answered. Desco repeatedly referred to his statement and said, I don't want to talk about this anymore. I only want to talk about our game against Notre Dame. And this was also Syracuse's weekly news conference that they do. It wasn't just about Chase Scanlon. This was sort of their regular scheduled news conference. Although, given the circumstances, it's understandable that there were a lot of questions about Chase Scanlon, of which Desco continually refused to answer. It leads to more questions than answers, Dix. And I want to get your opinion on where we are, what you have heard maybe from some of your sources. Most of the reporters that I follow who were privy to the news conference said it was a complete mess. So, Dix, as the Orange are going to head to South Bend this week for another pivotal game in the ACC, how does this set them up? What kind of distraction could this be for the team?
Well, I like the clarification that you gave, that this was Coach Desco's weekly touch point with the media. It wasn't a special press conference set up so he could address Chase Scanlon's situation and then move on to questions. I think what we've learned, especially from back in 2006 with the Duke incident, let's wait for all the facts to come in, all the details, the truth, if you will. This is a huge distraction for if what I've been reading is true. His teammates didn't want him back. That's huge. You've shared a locker room with guys. I've shared a locker room with guys, you know, our teammates, guys that we played with collegiately and high school. we know what that means, you know, what that bond means. And
even I'm lucky 25 years later, 30 years later.
Yeah. Some of those guys are my best friends, and to lose their faith in me, to lose that friendship, to lose that confidence, trust, respect, that would be devastating to me. So there's a lot to unpack in this situation, but some news sources, right, have come out this week. Central New York, some things have come out.
Yeah, so I'll read a bit of a story that was on Inside Lacrosse on Wednesday. According to a Syracuse.com report on Wednesday afternoon, Chase Scanlon was involved in what campus police labeled a domestic incident a day before he was suspended by the team, according to law enforcement sources and people familiar with the case. Scanlon was not charged with a crime by the university's Department of Public Safety, but Onondaga County District Attorney William Fitzpatrick told Syracuse.com that his office and the city of Syracuse police had joined the investigation and meeting with the other person involved. So there's certainly something there, but what it is still to be decided and determined.
Yeah, and I think if there's an ongoing investigation, my personal opinion, it's inappropriate to reinstate someone to come back to a lacrosse team. That is, you know, maybe he needs the camaraderie, maybe he needs the support of his teammates, but if they're not willing to give it, then why put those parties in an uncomfortable, maybe an even an untenable situation? And if there is truth to these reports, lacrosse should be the last thing on the minds of Chase Scanlon and Syracuse and all the athletic parties involved. So it's a sad situation all the way around. And I guess we'll wait for resolution in the coming weeks.
Well, we'll certainly see how it plays out on the field this week, Dix, as the Orange have a huge game against Notre Dame on Saturday. So that is a good transition point, Dix. Let's get to the games of this weekend. We've reached the end of April, and for some reason, it's not the biggest weekend for matchups of top 20 teams outside of a couple of the usual ACC games, but there are still some fascinating games to watch. So let's get to this week's previews. We'll start with a game tonight, Friday night, UMass at number 14, Delaware.
This is a UMass team that has been disappointing in 2021. A lot of high expectations for the Minutemen, and they just haven't really pulled those through. Meanwhile, Delaware, we've documented it many, many times, lost that first game to Mount St. Mary's, come to find out pretty much their entire starting lineup was out of the contest. And this will be the first time that UMass and Delaware are squaring off in 2021. So huge game for both of these teams, jockeying for position in the, you know, Delaware's already in the CAA tournament. UMass has a little bit of work to do, I think, to get in there. So should be a really good game. I think you have to favor Delaware. I mean, Mike Robinson and Charlie Kitchen have been playing really good offensively, high volume shooters, good point scorers. So, you know, UMass will have their work cut out for them in this game.
Moving to the action on Saturday, the day kicks off with a big one in the ACC is number 8, Syracuse. We've talked about a little bit already. They are 6-4, 2-3 in the ACC. They will head out to South Bend to play the number 4 Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who are coming off of a tough weekend in North Carolina. That game is at noon on ESPNU.
First time these two teams met, Notre Dame just wipe the Carrier Dome with the Syracuse Orange. But the Orange come in, huge win over Virginia last weekend that for all intents and purposes could have salvaged their season. Now they have the two wins over the Cavaliers. And this is a Notre Dame team that is really licking its wounds after seemingly having the Duke game last week in the bag. Looks like they got a little bit tired in the second half. Credit Duke. I mean, Duke made the plays down the stretch. Nakai Montgomery, Michael Sowers, Shoegate, I guess this will be forever known as when Kavanaugh lost his shoe. And how about all the how about the lacrosse Twitter on Thursday night, self-righteous and condemning the referees, and then people actually looked at a rule book and saw that it was a hard and fast rule that when a player on the offensive side loses a piece of equipment, the play is to be blown dead immediately. So that was pretty funny. But again, Notre Dame licking their, you know, loses the Duke game, then they lose to Carolina. So the Tobacco Road double dip was not favorable to the Irish. How will they respond? You know, how will they buck up for this game? They're at home, Barlotta. Fans are now there, right? So I think it'll be a lively atmosphere. I think it'll be a festive atmosphere. Should be a terrific ACC game.
Another fun game is taking place in the America East at noon on Saturday when number 19 Stony Brook, sitting atop the standings, tied at 6-2 in first place in the America East, will take on the Vermont Catamounts, who are also 6-2. That game is at noon.
Yes, so the Seawolves, tough break last week, losing to UMBC, the team that they are tied with atop the America East standings. Great game, 14-13 in overtime. That snapped a six-game win streak for Stony Brook. Streaky team. You know, so sitting at 8-4 collectively, won the first two games of the season, lost three in a row, then won six in a row. They're hoping that this is not an extended losing streak. Vermont tonight, huge win over Albany. Really bolstered them after they lost a tough game last weekend to Binghamton. You know, I mean, really a major upset when you consider everything. But that was the first game for the Catamounts in 2 weeks. Again, they rebound tonight with a big win over Albany. So this one has incredible significance for the America East.
It's playoff time in the Big Ten, Dicks. The first of the conferences to have their playoffs start this week, Michigan playing at Ohio State in the third version of the rivalry game at 4:00 on BTN.
Yeah, so Michigan got the 5 seed virtue of the tiebreaker and their result against Rutgers. It came down to a coin flip between them and Johns Hopkins. And
yeah, I was reading about the intricate Big Ten tiebreakers, and it's almost comical how far they went down with goal differential against opponents, head-to-head record. It was so even, they had to go to the fifth tiebreaker, which was just a coin flip.
It's like Friday Night Lights all over again.
Yes.
Who's going to be in the Texas State playoffs? I think Terry Foy reported, unconfirmed, but I trust Terry as a source, that the Wolverines called tails. And he's sticking to the tails never fails.
What kind of coin do they use? Is it just a quarter?
It's a coin that had a heads and a tails.
I'd like to know what kind of coin was flipped.
What do you go with? I'm a heads guy. I always go heads.
I'm tails never fails.
Tails never fails. I'm heads. I like heads.
And for some reason, I picture them flipping a quarter, but maybe it should have been like a silver dollar or something of real, greater worth.
Maybe it was a specially designed coin for the occasion, a Wolverine on one side and a Blue Jay on the other. Or when they finally figured out it had to go to a daggone coin flip, maybe it was just some guy digging in his pocket and it was a dime for all we know. That's all I have,
guys. Small. A dime is so small. I think that would be my last choice for an important coin flip.
But it's called a coin flip, and the dime is a coin.
Well, I think everyone is – a lot of people involved are happy about this. At least Hopkins fans feel like they may have a chance against Penn State, a team they've beaten before. But let's start with your breakdown of this Michigan-Ohio State game. Again, this is the third time that this important rivalry will have played in the same season.
And Michigan did beat the Buckeyes at the end of 2019, but Ohio State takes this rivalry incredibly seriously. Not that Michigan doesn't, but this not only is a special game regardless, but now that it has postseason implications or is a postseason game, that ratchets up the intensity even more for the Buckeyes. They've been struggling lately, losing, really getting dusted by Maryland in College Park a couple weeks ago, and then they lose a heartbreaker last weekend in the Shoe, Penn State. We'll talk about that. Just Dylan Folds and Alaric Fiok were tremendous in the stretch for the Nittany Lions. But Michigan's a team, they're much improved. no longer can you look at your schedule, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, but let's be truthful. When you were in the Big Ten over the last few years, you might look at that Michigan game and say, okay, that's a W. You know, and now it's a dogfight. You know, they lost a heartbreaker to Penn State in overtime. Then they played Rutgers to within one goal this past Sunday, a game they could have tied with an extra man situation late in the game. So, I mean, these two teams, they're going to go at it. It'll be on BTN, as you mentioned, at 4 o'clock on Saturday. Joel Godet and Greg Bice, former Buckeye defenseman, will have the call. Should be a terrific game.
You will be on the call for the second game of the day, 6 o'clock on BTN. Hopkins Blue Jays are 2-8. They'll take on Penn State, who's 4-6 after their win over the Buckeyes last week to earn the third spot in the Big Ten tournament.
So Penn State's really come together the last couple of weeks. The thriller over Michigan, and then the come from behind win over Ohio State on the road. So does this team have the makings of a run potentially? The Big Ten tournament is at Panzer, home field advantage, home cooking. And not only is Hopkins potentially more favorable to having a matchup with Penn State versus Ohio State, but going into the six, you stay out of the path of the 4-5, which has to go to the one, which is Maryland, in the semifinals. And again, we've talked about this quite a bit on the podcast. Not that Rutgers will be a cakewalk, but I think teams would rather play the Scarlet Knights than the Blue Jays at this point, even though Hopkins gave the Terrapins their most competitive game a week ago, which I think is what Hopkins needs to build on. But eventually Hopkins, what's it been, Dan, 5 weeks in a row where the Jays will get off to a slow start. They fight back, claw to get within a couple goals, tie the game or take the lead, and then they can't close. Eventually you have to close out one of those games. It's been 5 or 6 weeks in a row. So we'll see if Hopkins can do that on Saturday night against Penn State, but it's going to be difficult. You got to account for O'Keefe. He's playing great. Dylan Folds is up this game tremendously. Dan Rayum. The name always gives me trouble, man. Rayum. But Dan Rayum has been really, really good lately. And I love the goalie change that Penn State's made. Alaric Fayok has come in and he made overtime saves against Michigan. He made a game-saving stop against Jack Myers from Ohio State this past weekend. So it'll be a good one. Myself and Pete Medhurst will have the call Saturday night, 6 o'clock on BTN. We'll miss Joe B. Joe's got Caps responsibility, so we know how that goes.
Finally, the biggest game of the weekend in another rivalry game, number 2 Duke. It's 12-1 overall, 4-1 in the ACC. Will travel to Chapel Hill to take on their arch rival, the number 3 North Carolina ranked Tar Heels, who are 10-2 and 3-2. That game's at 4 o'clock, and this is a battle. This is a battle of a royale.
It is, and the first time around, it was sort of a battle royale. You know, a little old school wrestling match, two tacticians going at it. I told Mike Preston in the Sun, when you think about ACC lacrosse, you think about horses and Ferraris, and this game was more monster truck the first time around in terms of battling for every inch of the field. These two teams are terrific. Gray versus Sowers once again. Bowen on one side, JT Giles-Harris on the other. Get it while you can, though, folks, because no ACC tournament this year, which, I mean, I guess they have their reasons, but whereas all the other conferences seem to be playing postseason, and even though they played each other twice in the regular season, it could be the trilogy, as we're seeing on Saturday in the Big Ten. But, you know, it doesn't give a team a chance to get a kink in their armor before NCAA tournament selection, but it also doesn't give a team, should they need it, an opportunity to score another quality win in this year of uncertainty. But this will be a terrific game. It was the first time around. And this time, it's – what did Coach Bresci tell us a couple weeks ago? Duke, this will be on Dorrance, the grass field, or will it be in Keenan? I think it's going to be in Keenan.
I think you're right. I think it's in
Keenan. Yeah, so they'll play in the football stadium.
And they'll be able to have more fans because they can
space them out. Yeah, and it was a great atmosphere on Sunday for the Carolina-Notre Dame game. So that'll be fun. And I'm sure that game, I don't know if it's on ESPN or ACC Network, but I know both of these ACC games are going to be televised. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the ACC Network will want to pick that one up. They've been moving some games around. It's been hard.
They have been, which is fine. I mean, you know, as long as they keep it same time, you just have to go to a different channel, which is no big deal.
But again, that game will be at 4 o'clock on Sunday, and you'll certainly want to tune in to watch that one. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go. It was great to see you. And Erica came over for dinner a little impromptu on Saturday. We did some grilling.
Surprise appearance.
It was a lot of fun. I had a great time. And we need to do that again soon. But we did some, again, didn't know you were coming over. And it was a real casual thing. We did some burgers and hot dogs. And I made a pasta salad. But it made me think this is grilling season. Especially, I don't know if where you're listening. But Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of this week in the Mid-Atlantic, it's been 80 plus degrees. It's starting to feel like spring. The trees are green. The flowers are out. And the weather feels great. It makes me think of summertime. Plus, CDC, if you're vaccinated, you don't even wear a mask outside anymore. How about this news? So makes me think about some barbecuing. And I want to know, Dix, I want to get your take on the best things to throw on the grill. What are your favorite things? What do you like to make? Something that might take a little bit longer or cook a little bit longer. But what are your favorite things to throw on the grill and eat off the grill?
Well, it's not – this is not complicated. Burgers. So
I want to rank them.
Burgers are – I think – well, all right. If you go on rankings, then you got to talk steak, either a New York strip or a filet. On the grill, and then
New York strip's my favorite. It's at the top of my list.
And the reverse sear. I've learned the reverse sear over the last couple of years watching Drunken Meatball, Brian Carcaterra.
Explain it.
Instagram. So it's you grill your meat. Let's say in this case it is a New York strip. Mm-hmm. You grill it. Now, I'm not a big temperature guy. I don't have a thermometer. I just kind of do it by feel, because I'm not super skilled. But while you're grilling it, you then get an iron skillet and throw in, you know, you can do garlic, butter, whatever, get that thing like scorching hot, and then you finish it like a minute, 90 seconds on each side, just like to sear it. So you've got it grilled, it's cooked, and then you just sear it on the in the skillet for a short period of time. And it's good, man. It's like really, really good. It just makes it a little bit more, I don't want to say crisp, but it's just more done on the outside than it's just like butter on the inside. It's fantastic.
That is a nice way to do it. Interesting. That reminds me of one of the things on my list is ribs, where I kind of do the opposite. I slow cook them at about 250 degrees, a rack of, baby back pork ribs. I'll put my rub on there. I let them sit overnight in the fridge, bring them out the next day, let them warm up to room temperature a little bit. Then I 250 for about three and a half hours. Then I open those up, put the barbecue sauce on, and I put them on a hot grill for about 10 to 15 minutes on each side to give a nice char broil on each side. And it is just perfect. The meat falls off the bone, but it is just absolutely delicious.
That's the word, char. That's what you get on the reverse sear, the char, not a crisp, but char. I've never been good at ribs. Never had success. When I want ribs, I go to Bare Bones or I go to a charcoal grill in Baltimore.
Next time, you're coming over to my house. I'm telling you, I make them. I perfected it over the last year. It's simple and easy for me to do, or it seems that way. It just takes a little bit of time.
But how much for one rib? Remember that? Yeah. Remember the old Chris Rock Bring the Pain skit? Yeah.
So
you got soda, just pour it in my hand.
I like cooking fish on the grill, like a nice piece of salmon, but it can be flaky and get the skin. So I don't
real
avoid it.
Fish, yeah.
But I had to cook some for your wife. She came over and said she brought her own
my wife, pescatarian.
That's right. So, and tuna easier to cook because they're just thicker, like steak.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we, Eric and I were going to go to dinner, texted you and your wife to see if you wanted to come. And you're like, yeah, we can't drive. Why don't you just come over? I said, Eric, you want to go to Dan and Amy's? She's like, sure. She goes, well, wait a minute, but they're doing burgers. I was like, look in the fridge. We always have fish in the fridge. And sure enough, we had a couple, what are they, fillets? Was it mahi-mahi fillet?
Yeah, they're a little mahi-mahi. So I did one with some seasoning I had in my cabinet, and then the other one, my favorite way for salmon, is just real simple. You just soak it in lemon juice and put Old Bay seasoning on it, and it's delightful.
It works.
Yeah, so other things that I like, Dix, I like to do beer can chicken. You ever done that?
I know I have not, but I have heard of it, and I believe I've eaten it in the past.
Yeah, when I take the time to do that, basically you just take a beer can and put it up the canal of the chicken, and it just allows you to soak up the juices, and it keeps the chicken comes out really moist. And I just stand by. I usually do two at a time, get the little ones, because you know if you're gonna take the time to do that, you gotta cook it a little slower. That you should have a meat thermometer for. Like you can tell whether it's done or not. And then the other thing that I really enjoy doing, at least over the last year or so, has been kebabs. Mm-hmm. Making like a chicken, chicken and veggie skewers or beef, and just cooking some kebabs on the grill. They're just fun to do.
So the other cut of meat that we grill quite a bit is flank steak. We use that for steaks, Caesar salads. Kids in particular like steak Caesar. And so we'll grill like a little flank steak up, put some Montreal seasoning on it.
Yeah, that's what I do. That kind
of thing, you know, little olive oil, gussy that bad boy up. Yeah, we're a red meat family. Chicken's always great on the grill as well. Trying to think of other things. Got to be a little bit more adventurous on the grill this summer. But, I mean, you know, again, burgers, man. Can't beat. And I love like Italian sausage on the grill. It's fantastic.
Sausage or brats?
Brats.
Yeah.
Brats. Yeah. Mm. Big brat fan. So.
Yeah, we don't discriminate. We eat all kinds of food at my house. But I need to eat red meat like once a week. It's probably not too healthy for me, but I love it. And we eat a lot of vegetables with it. We don't, you know, go in with heavy with the carbs, I guess. But you got me hungry, Dix, and we got to get together again for another barbecue soon.
Right on.
All right. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. Don't forget to catch Dixie this weekend calling the Big Ten game, Hopkins versus Penn State. We always love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games while you can.